Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Podcast Daily. It is also Snap Judgments. We're back together and to talk about Ohio State. Yeah, it's a two for one. It's a special. We're cramming it all together as we get ready for a pretty busy week for Ohio State spring practice. That's Berm, Bill Landis, and I'm Austin Ward. Wednesday is pro day for Ohio State. They've got availability on Tuesday and Thursday for the current team, plus a scrimmage on Saturday. So putting these together, we thought was the most effective use of everybody's time. So let's start in pure Snappy J style with Bill telling me what he learned on Tuesday in the Woody from Ryan Day.
Very early on, Ryan Day said that Carson Hinsman has turned some heads with the way that he... I'm using those words. They weren't exactly his words, but I'm paraphrasing. Has turned some heads with the way he's played early in spring practice while Vic Cutler is still trying to catch up a little bit to the offense, to what it's like to practice at a place like Ohio State every day. And then I kind of blacked out after that, so I don't really know what he said in the remaining 30 minutes of his press conference.
Yeah, Bill went and got a cigarette. That was weird.
Yeah, they don't let you smoke inside, so he missed the rest of the press conference, the team meeting. Right. I believe what Ryan Day said was, "You all know I've been impressed by Carson." And then that's when Bill was like, I'm out.
And then you heard a hell yeah from the back of the room. And you're like, who's that?
Yeah, go Birds. So, okay, that seems like a decent place to start, right? It's day three. They only had the pads on once so far, but Carson Hinsman and the center battle and the right tackle spot is going to get a lot of attention, not just from you, Bill, but over the next, 12 workouts for Ohio State, because we know how pressing that need is with two guys who are going to be working out, or three guys, really, two first-rounders, and then wherever Luke Whipler goes to replace on the offensive line. It's become something of a dead horse perhaps on this show, but that's a pretty big deal.
It's a pretty big horse.
It's a big horse. I don't, there's what now? 12 practices left. So a lot can happen with Vic Cutler and Carson Hinsman. It's by no means over, but I did find it interesting that Ryan Day was asked specifically about the center job and the right tackle job, and he got specific with the center job and saying, making it sound like Carson Hinsman is a little bit ahead of there, while really saying nothing about the right tackle job, that it didn't want to get into it, didn't want to say whether or not Zen Mohalski or Tegra Shibola has a leg up or how they have looked, or really give any thoughts whatsoever on that position. So I thought that was interesting. I maybe that's reading too much into it, but it does seem like there's an opportunity there, right, with Luke Whipler gone. And it seems like Carson Hinsman has done a really good job to this point, only three practices in, of kind of taking that opportunity and running with it. We'll see what happens. Like, Vic's a really good athlete from what we've been able to see at Louisiana Monroe. And if he catches up the speed with anything else, then I think that does become a true competition at that spot. And obviously Jacob James is in that mix too. But if you had to handicap it right now, I think you'd have to say that Carson Hinsman has positioned himself well in that battle.
I don't think that a player like Vic Cutler was brought into Ohio State with the same concept as Davison Igbinosin or Jahad Carter as far as what their role was going to be. That is a player who can provide depth at all five positions on the offensive line. But number one, depth is good. Number two, as I mentioned on one of these shows, I think 2 weeks ago, like the difference with Carson Hinsman is that if he plays well enough to earn the starting job and you don't start him this year, the odds of him being back in Columbus next year are not high. And I think you have to look at things from that perspective as well. You want depth. And if one player is playing well enough to be a starter and you're not playing him because of either he's younger or, he's going to make a few more mental mistakes because he hasn't played as much football, then you risk losing depth down the road. And Carson Hinsman was an All-American high school football player. That is a guy you can build the entire line around. So I think that it's good that he's stepping up. I think it's obviously very important that Ryan Day announced it and said, hey, this is happening. But Jacob James is still in that mix too, and we won't see him until the summer. So I don't think that the picture is entirely complete, but certainly Carson Hinsman, each one of us that we've seen him at practice the first two times we got to see him, we're like, wow, that dude looks different than he did a year ago. And you can certainly see that it's getting some positive reception from the staff.
Yeah, there are two separate conversations that you have to have there at center because, as you said, Jacob James is not participating. We did see him in the Woody doing some work on his own last week as he's trying to recover and get healthy, from that offseason surgery. Between Carson Hinsman and Vic Cutler, I think that's certainly encouraging for Ohio State that they could say, well, he's ahead at this point because he's got a year in the system. He knows the offense. It's also certainly positive that physically they think he's able to do that at this point. But his competition with Vic Cutler is going to be different than it is with Jacob James, and that's not going to happen until, you know, really August, until they're going head to head. So, yeah, as you said, burn depth is good. If you have two guys that you think could do it, and if Vic Cutler then becomes the third, who you can move around to different spots, you've created a little bit more depth for Ohio State. That's certainly a positive. We don't know what's going to happen in that same vein at right tackle, and I know that's why we're so intrigued by what's going to transpire on Saturday in the scrimmage. Even Ryan Day seemed to even want to tap the brakes on that, whether that's right tackle or the quarterbacks or Brian Hartline calling plays. Like, hey, this might not be as game-like as I want it to be because it's only practice number five. I think probably both of you made that point the other day. Bless you, Berm.
Sorry.
But if we were hoping to like just see how Brian Hartline calls plays, we're not going to get to do that. You know, it's not going to be the end of the quarterback battle on Saturday. And I think Ryan Day was trying to bring a little bit more patience to all of these conversations when we want answers to be readily available.
Yeah, but why do people expect them to happen that soon, Bill? Why are people?
I don't know. It's more fun that way.
Yeah, it's practice. The scrimmage will be practice five and a third in pads after a week off. So like I'm curious to see how much like good on good. He did say they want to tackle to the ground, and I think they will do some of that with certain guys. But this is a gradual process, which is important to keep in mind. That's not to say I think there is going to be good information to gather from that opportunity to watch a scrimmage on Saturday and even frankly talking to people on Thursday. We have to talk to the offensive and defensive linemen, but we're all impatient. We want to know what things are going to look like when the ball gets kicked off against Indiana, and we're not nearly there yet. So yeah. I thought that was probably good on Ryan Day to remind us, like, listen, we have a lot of work left to do here before we start getting answers on this stuff.
Why isn't this team ready to play the Chiefs? Like, this is garbage. Poor coaching all over the place.
They don't actually ever play the Chiefs, bro.
What? All right.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back to the defensive line because Bill mentioned we talked to them on Thursday, and that's going to be enlightening. Ryan Day, you know, was asked about the depth after the trio of Mike Hall, Tyleik Williams, and Ty Hamilton, and they acknowledged, hey, they don't really have any that's played any football. And so I think it is worth noting at least that Tank Booker, the Maryland transfer, was tweeting that he was in Columbus on Tuesday. So I would imagine that is something to pay attention to as far as just the depth piece goes for Ohio State, whenever that is allowed to actually happen. Who knows? There are no rules. But you have to have guys that have played football. We talked about that at length on the live show at Roosters on Monday. The opportunity to have more guys that have played meaningful college reps is important. And I don't know how you're going to get that this spring for Ohio State. Because the reps were so limited for Ty Hamilton and Tyleik Williams and Michael Hall a year ago, it's not like that group, who is your experience group, played a whole bunch of football. We spent the entire last year complaining about the fact that Mike Hall was getting 7 or 8 snaps a game instead of 20 or 25 like he should have been. So it's not like even that experience group is experienced. So I keep going back to wondering like how the defensive line, which has to set the tone for the whole defense, looks and is going to be ready for this spring, because that is how the defense will go.
Ty Hamilton did wind up getting a pretty sizable chunk of experience last year for Ohio State, and I think maybe the reason that it feels like the group collectively didn't is because we expected to see more of Mike Hall and Tyleik Williams, or even wanted to see more, or believed that would have been the best version of Ohio State. But again, I think the point is well taken. I don't think anybody looks at Ohio State's roster on the defensive line and says, well, Ty Hamilton is a ready-made star. Like, they can build around this experienced guy. That's not the feeling. And I don't think even in the Woody that they feel like that group has the body of work necessary for them to get where they want to go, which is why whether Tank Booker was, you know, an invited guest, or if there's secret tampering going on, who knows? How can you go on these visits if you're not actually in the portal? I don't understand.
Hey, he's from Cincinnati. Maybe he was just in town visiting friends. I mean, you don't know. I don't know.
He
was teammates with Mayan Williams and Jermaine Matthews in high school. So the very real likelihood is he was just hanging out with those guys to see them and see how they are doing as people.
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah. I, again,
friends are important.
I'm not trying to, I can certainly accept that explanation, Berm. I'm just wondering, like, if they're not going to do anything about any of this stuff, like, what are the actual guidelines in place? It doesn't matter. I guess that's a sad point. But what a remarkable coincidence that Ryan Day was asked about the lack of depth on defensive tackle, and Tank Booker was, you know, just he had just tweeted a little bucknut emoji 5 minutes beforehand. Remarkable coincidence.
Maybe he was just foraging somewhere around Columbus.
I said that he was probably dropping his pin in a nut farm.
I think it's a matter of the fact that it's springtime.
Who among us?
It's spring, and he was clearly just out foraging.
So to speak.
Foraging
so to speak.
The nuts that he had left buried, you know, in November, clearly.
Huh. Oh, boy.
That's weird.
That was my mistake. Yeah. I shouldn't have said that out loud. What else did you learn today, Bill?
I learned that Ryan Day is paranoid about even the fullback position, that we don't even know if it exists. Because you asked him what's up with that spot, and his answer was, we have an idea about some ideas.
I think that was the most paranoid answer he's ever given about anything.
It was.
And I was stunned. I was taken aback. It's like, he's usually pretty good natured about that stuff. That's not super important. Like, haha, yeah, I guess we buried it. Mitch Rossi put it out back and threw some dirt on the fullback position. But instead, yeah, we've kicked around some ideas about having some ideas. Okay.
Shouldn't we postulate on what those ideas about ideas may be? Are we talking about a couple guys?
You sure should.
That position, whether or not it got a lot of, you know, carries or catches or when it like became pretty important in the identity of the Ohio State offense in the last few years, as Mitch Rossi, you know, excelled at it. And you have a couple of guys on the roster who have skill sets to play parts of it. I don't know if you have a one guy that can play all of it. I mean, G Scott could be in that role. We joked about Reed Carrico a little bit, but I think that's a possibility for him. It's a guy who is a pretty darn good high school running back at Ironton. I mean, who else do you guys think fits into that body type / position type? Because I don't think it's like the Sam Hart 6'5", 240-pound tight end that goes back there, right?
I think Chip Tranum should do it, but I know that he doesn't want to.
Well, that'd be deadly.
Yeah. I think ever since you mentioned Reed Carrico, like, I can't stop thinking about it. Like, he's the only guy I can envision now in that spot. Because I don't even know, like, G Scott is, in my mind, just like more of a big slot receiver than he is a tight end. I just don't know if he's ever going to really have the blocking prowess to be that position. He's also pretty tall, too, like kind of tall and kind of long. I think the leverage could be an issue at that spot, too. And like Bennett Christian's a big dude. So like, I don't know, like their tight ends are all like 6'5". And like 6'5", 250. And Mitch Rossi was like 6'1", 250. It's hard to find a guy who's like 6'1", 250 and athletic to do that.
When I asked Reed about that 2 weeks ago, he said he's thought about it. He's thought maybe I can find my way into that spot. And then he said, but I want to be a linebacker. I love being a linebacker. I like hitting people. And I didn't say, like, you still get to hit people at that spot, but you still get to hit people at that spot. Like that's the position where you're hitting people probably the most of all of anyone on offense. So I think it is a good fit. I just don't know if it's something that they're really, you know, kicking around about that idea, about the idea.
Well, all ideas are on the table. They've got ideas about thinking about them, Berm.
I like that. I think that if you don't have an idea about what idea you have, then you have the wrong idea, clearly.
That's a great point. I hadn't really thought about it from that perspective. It's also key there. We'd kind of glossed over tight end. Like you have Kate Stover there and you know what's coming back. But Bill and I have talked about this before, especially during the tight ends preview last month, that like Ryan Day wants to play 12 personnel. And when Luke Farrell and Jeremy Ruckert were around, that was almost a third of the time offensively that they were going to that package. And can they get back to that? What does that take? You know, for both Joe Royer and G Scott, that's going to be a lot more. Can you win those blocking matchups? And Bill, you alluded to G, and obviously his strength is coming from wide receiver, being more dangerous as a target there. But we know that Ohio State's not going to put those guys on the field unless they have full confidence that they can blow somebody up in the running attack. And I know that that's also some frustration for Ohio State fans who just say, well, Why can't they throw it to him 50, 60 times? Or that's what G's good at, that Joe Royer could stretch the middle of the field. Like, I think it's a fair question to ask that, but also fair from Ohio State's perspective that they don't want to compromise on what they think is important for the standard at that spot.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting the way that Ryan Day couched that, where it was basically like, if they can't play as an 11 personnel and like solo block a 7 technique, then we're not going to put them out there in 12 personnel, which I understand the sentiment and appreciate it, but I'm more on the side of, well, can't they just like be a receiver until they learn to do that? Let's just let them. Why does we have to wait until they're the total package to put them on the field? I think they do limit themselves in that way sometimes, but it does. It was kind of like an interesting challenge, I thought, to guys like G Scott and Joe Royer. And I don't know, like maybe someone like Bennett Christian is like sort of the opposite, where maybe he's more of a blocker than he is a receiving threat, and they want to see more from him in that regard before they kind of threw him out there too. Maybe Sam Hart is the same way. So I don't know. I think it's pretty clear they want to play more than one, especially with a pretty green offensive line. I think you'd want that extra blocker out there when you can have it. But I don't know that I look at any of the guys other than Cade and think to myself, like, okay, that guy is right now what they're looking for. I think that everyone else in that group has some work to do.
Yeah, I mean, even Cade has work to do as a blocker. I mean, it's not natural to block people. It's he wants to hit people, and he's good at that, but holding on, you know, riding blocks out and kicking blocks out, that's a totally different thing. And he struggled with that in the second half of last season quite a bit. Some of that may have been the hip injury that he was dealing with, but you have to have guys that are complete at that position, because you do know that most of the time when they're out there, they're not throwing the ball to the tight end. So it's not really a decoy. It's like, here's 8 offensive linemen, or 7 offensive linemen. And we're going to still throw to Marvin Harrison, but now we have better protection. Like, so you do have Bennett Christian was in basically a wing T offense in high school, but he's got the size. He is a pretty good blocker. Sam Hart was just a de facto, you know, a glorified big wide receiver coming out of Colorado. Joe Royer was the same way. These guys have to learn all of these things. But to your point, sometimes you just have to let a guy's best trait get utilized and put them out there and see what they can do. If you recruited those guys to catch passes at Ohio State out of the tight end's position, then put them out there at tight end and let them catch passes at Ohio State, I think, at some time.
That wide receiver you mentioned who catches a lot of passes, he will participate in Ohio State's pro day on Wednesday. We speculated that might be the case, that we've seen this before with some of the underclassmen since those rules changed, that they get to go out there and help. And so Marvin Harrison and Xavier Johnson and Jaden Ballard will help CJ Stroud out on Wednesday morning in the Woody. Is everyone just going to leave on Wednesday talking about what watching Marvin Harrison in front of these NFL scouts, or can CJ still keep the spotlight for himself?
Well, I mean, that's CJ was the star last year when Chris and Olave and Garrett Wilson were working out. I mean, that's the way it's going to go. CJ Stroud's a known quantity at this point. I think you kind of get you know what you're going to get. Marvin Harrison is what people are going to be talking about as far as the NFL goes, I think, tomorrow.
Yeah, there's going to be NFL writers there, and they're all going to be talking about Marvin, I think, because they're probably sick of talking about all the guys in the draft process because it's so overcovered now. So it's something new to talk about. I do want, like, it's routes on air. Like, they're not going, it's not one-on-ones versus DBs. So I don't really know how much a receiver can do to, like, wow people in that kind of setting, as opposed to a quarterback who can still make, like, some crazy throws, even if there is no defense. So I think CJ will still command more of the spotlight than Marvin, but if we're breaking it up, the spotlight into percentages, it's going to be like 60% CJ, 30% Marvin, and then like 10% Jackson, maybe.
Do you think that ball placement specialist CJ Stroud will just look back and wink at the scouts and be like, watch this, and like purposefully throw one over Marvin's head? Like, watch him do this.
He could. be intentionally inaccurate.
Yeah. Be like, because you get, he'll tell him beforehand, like, I'm going to do this on purpose. It's still going to go where I want it. And then I know that Marvin will catch it. I think he'll do that.
Yeah, he probably will do that. Because he wants to help Marv out.
BPS.
Yeah.
CJ Stroud, BPS. Flashes a badge.
Is that, Bill, you read more draft analysis stuff than I do. Is ball placement specialist a normal thing that people say about quarterbacks?
I had not heard that before CJ said out of the combine. I like it, though.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I think it's true. especially comparing his skill set to the rest of this draft class. I think it's like, it's really true. So I like that he coined his own phrase there. He even kind of like when he said it, like when he said, I'm a ball placement specialist, he kind of like smirked, like, you know, he was saying something new. So I appreciated that.
I'm going to be using that just as much as safety driven defense from now on.
Ask Ryan Day, which of Kyle McCord and Devin Brown is a ball placement specialist.
I can't believe we didn't get an answer on Tuesday morning about what their extraordinary elite talents are specifically after three practices in spring camp.
Kyle's really good at Dance Dance Revolution. You know,
that's good footwork then, Brent. All right. Okay. Yeah. We got that. Bill, did you get the answer that you were expecting to that question?
Yeah, it was more just like trying to get inside the mind of Ryan Day a little bit, because I don't know that there was an expected answer. I asked him, like, how do you evaluate playmaking in a controlled scrimmage where they're not live and it's just not the same thing as being in a game? And his answer was really like, you can't. Like, you try to project it as best as you can and rely on like institutional memory of decision making from previous quarterbacks, but then you don't know until they get into a game, which I think is interesting, because I feel like Ryan Day, unprovoked multiple times already, has kind of gone to the playmaking and using your feet as a quarterback. And I don't know what that means. Maybe he's just saying it because he thinks it's what we want to hear. Or maybe he's saying it because something has changed in his brain where that's a little more front of mind for him now. But even if it is, I don't know that it's a thing that you can really get a great feel for until you throw a guy out into the game. And I don't know if that benefits one quarterback over the other. It probably doesn't. But I think it does underscore maybe what's most important in this battle. And it's not that flashy stuff. It's who can do the routine stuff over and over again and make the fewest amount of mistakes, I think, is a guy that's ultimately going to win it.
Do you think that Ryan Day is having an identity crisis at quarterback, like what he wants at quarterback in his mind? He had the single best running quarterback I've ever seen at quarterback for 2 years and never wanted him to run. He had CJ Stroud, who was clearly not the best running quarterback we've ever seen, but then and then CJ finally got a chance to use his feet against Georgia, and it opened up the Ohio State offense in a way people hadn't seen in 2 years. Do you think in his mind he's sort of fighting himself about what he wants out of that position, or is he evolving his thoughts about how to just use the guy and say, hey, we just have to do whatever we can do now, instead of being so controlled and in the pocket?
I'm not sure that it's there may be pieces of every explanation that you offered there, Byrne, but I think that it's not going to change the way that they call the offense. I think that the structure of that is going to continue the same way that it was from 2017 onward, that the offense is not going to dramatically change no matter who's under center. And I don't think that it's a mandate that if Kyle McCord wins the job that he has to run seven or eight times. What I think may be happening is something that we started talking about maybe more in October and November with CJ Stroud, where Ryan Day is purposefully protecting his quarterback, saying, do not run pretty much under any circumstance, not calling it, not asking him to go past the line of scrimmage, even in scramble opportunities and extending plays, because he wants to keep his starting quarterback healthy, which again, I think is certainly a justifiable position to take, that you are at your best when your starting quarterback is healthy and on the field. But I think it came to the detriment of certainly CJ Stroud in spots where there were 5 yards or 6 yards or opportunities to get a first down, and they didn't do that. So if some of that is loosening the reins, the same way that we've talked about the play calling and handing off and delegating that responsibility and trusting, whether it's Kyle McCord or Devin Brown, there may be three or four times in a game where it's okay to run, and you are free to do so. If that may be the situation where I think that's the change in Ryan Day. I don't think the rest, there's not going to be zone reads or quarterback powers coming back here in abundance for Ohio State. I don't think that part is changing at all. And I don't think that he wants, and no matter who, if Justin Fields was back here, I don't think that he would run him 15 times a game or even 10 times a game. I don't think that part's going to change, but certainly we saw what happened against Georgia and what CJ Stroud was able to do in situations where you had to do it. And I think that those were spots early in the year he was specifically told not to do that.
Yeah, I think he'll allow more room for creativity. I actually do think they might do a little bit more designed quarterback run, not a ton, not JT Barrett level, once or twice a game in the biggest games, maybe. Because even like some of the stuff from CJ were designed runs, the stuff that we hadn't really seen from him aside from the Northwestern game when it was like mandatory that they had to do it to move the ball. So I don't know. I don't think he's having a crisis of or identity crisis, excuse me. I do think it's a little bit of an evolution. And it also depends on who the starter is too. Like I think if it's Devin Brown, you probably can run more like zone read stuff with him than you would with Kyle McCord. But either way, it's not a ton. But I think there's a realization now that just has to be part of the equation or more a part of the equation than it has been on a week to week basis. And I also wonder too, like they've been really close to winning a Heisman Trophy at that position and haven't. And I think the thing that's kept Ohio State's quarterback from winning it the last couple of years, well, maybe with Dwayne and CJ in particular, is that lack of playmaking outside of the pocket on a consistent basis. I just don't think a guy who sits in the pocket and throws 45 touchdown passes is going to win it now. I think that's the expectations of the position have changed. And I don't think that's the chief motivating factor, but I wonder if it's a little bit in the back of Ryan Day's head where like they attract the best quarterbacks in the country. They churn out first round picks. He probably wants that feather in his cap too, if they have Heisman Trophy winners in the position. And I think that'll help.
I think so. Maybe it's just a recalibration of the escape plan for the quarterback. When a play has gone awry, it's like, let's bump up the interest in running it versus throwing it away versus, you know, live for another play. And also, I think that you're right about the quarterbacks who are just standing in the pocket passing the ball. Like, Austin doesn't believe that, like, people who don't write their own songs should be considered singers, you know? Like, so he's very George.
What?
He's very anti George Strait. He's like, oh, this guy sucks. He doesn't write his own songs, you know. So like, I think you want a guy who's able to. You want a guy who's able to do everything. You want a guy who's able to write the song, play the song, and entertain on the stage, not just stand there and play the guitar that someone else, you know, wrote a song for. George Strait doesn't even play
words
the guitar, so he's a true
words are words are important, Berm. I didn't say that people who are singing aren't singers.
Yeah, you know what I meant. You're not a real artist. You know what I mean. You get it.
I've had too much deference to George Strait for not being able to write a song or play an instrument.
I don't care about that.
The king?
Yeah, because he's a not troubadour. My king. I mean, he's a troubadour.
He's doing karaoke,
which I sincerely appreciate.
Not my king. Okay. I don't know. It's an interesting dynamic because I still don't think when they coach this in practice and what we'll see, like they're never going to go through a scrimmage and be like, hey, go run the ball if a play breaks down. There's no value in that. So they're drilled on this over and over, and it does carry an over a game, and there is value in it because if you can take and connect on those shots because you have Marvin Harrison, Emeka Egbuka, and Julian Fleming down the field, like that's oftentimes better. If you're taking a risk reward situation, you might get a touchdown instead of a first down. I am in favor of rolling the dice. I think the three of us like to gamble a little bit around here, and it's not even probably viewed as a gamble if you have those wide receivers to take advantage of. And both Devin Brown and Kyle McCord said that would still be their main prerogative, would not be to go just take 5 yards available if they could throw for 15 and use those skill position players. So that part probably won't change all that much, but even if it does slightly, that may still make a bigger difference over the course of the year.
Word. Concur.
Word.
I have a bit of a housekeeping note for those Buckeyes fans out there who are doing the internet sleuthing that everyone always does. Austin did ask why Jair Brown was no longer on the online roster and was told what, Austin?
Somebody who helps design their website made an error in clicking names over to the spring roster. Ohio State doesn't always do this where they they close the book and then they put a separate 2023 spring roster. That's not, I don't remember them ever really doing that, although I could be wrong. But there was that name, Jair Brown. I think Tegra Tshabolo is not listed on that online roster either. That is just a Ohio clerical State website error. Situation. Clerical error. Good word for it, Berm. It is not. Jair Brown and Tegra Tshabolo, we can attest, are available and on the field for Ohio State.
Do you just think Ohio State's like their website administrator hates Lakota West High School? I don't know. We should check and see if Malik Hartford was the third one who was missing, because if so, we're onto something.
Wow. Maybe there's something in there. Yeah, I am too. This is fascinating stuff that we're doing in real time.
Deep dive.
He's yeah, there. Maybe there's some sort of code breakdown, like Lakota West. They don't think it's a real school.
Yeah, maybe not.
That theory didn't last very long.
Well, it's probably because Hartford is a new addition to the roster, not a transfer over from last year's roster that they had to select, you know, the next button.
Yeah. Bill and I that makes joked sense. About that in the team room. Like, good thing they didn't accidentally leave off Marvin Harrison Jr. Then that would have been a much bigger deal. Also, but,
interneting is hard, though.
Kudos to those internet sleuths who woke up on Tuesday morning like, I want to know if this roster is up to date. I got to go find out some information on Jair Brown. Oh, no, he's gone.
Yeah.
He's gone. What does this mean?
Without those people, a lot of times things that become real, like it's crazy how often the conspiracy theorists are correct.
No.
That's a totally different show.
I'm giving full marks for them for doing it. I hadn't noticed that, but I also have a physical copy of the roster that had Jair Brown on it, so I wasn't concerned. But nice job.
Yeah,
you I do mean that.
Yeah,
congratulations.
Send info to tips@thepodcast.com if you'd like to be featured on the next internet sleuthing show that we do.
Let's not call it tips.
Send your craziest conspiracy theories to Berm as well.
Yeah, I'm into that. Somebody asked me on the live stream on Tuesday my opinion on the existence of Sasquatch. Why? I'm not sure, but I appreciated it. I instantly thought in my head, I did not type this out, that it's not a Sasquatch. It's just a squash, of course. I didn't really want to go down that rabbit hole. But my answer was that I don't believe the Sasquatch currently exists anymore in the world.
Currently.
But I do believe at some point in history, Sasquatch, squatch-like things did exist.
Why are we calling it just squatch? I'm not familiar with this rabbit hole.
Well, because sass doesn't make sense. I mean, we can go into the semantics of notch versus chose. I'm fine with that. But there is no way that just calling it a sask works when squatch is available. You know?
Okay. Hey, where do you guys land on the Paul McCartney conspiracy? You think that's the real Paul McCartney, or did he die in the 60s?
Oh, that's the real Paul.
Yeah, I'm definitely on team real Paul. I'm also on team Avril Lavigne is still alive. I'm not sure how.
Let's get Spencer Holbrook here to give his thoughts on Avril.
We'll bring in Spencer Holbrook from Letterman Row. Now, Spencer, just kidding. He's not coming. But the point is, he believes that Avril Lavigne died like in the mid 2000s, and that it's a replacement.
He's team fake Avril. Can you believe that there is such a thing? From a normally well-balanced young man.
I don't know. I need to study it more.
No.
To do my own research.
Yeah, Bill, kudos to you for not just buying what other people tell you. I appreciate that about you.
Thanks.
I guess. Yeah. That's what you should do. Do your own research and trust whatever you read.
That's right.
The internet never is wrong. So that's the important part.
Yeah. Well, Avril is alive, and I'm going to plant my flag on that team. That's where I am. And then I'm going to go get ready to cover Ohio State's Pro Day on Wednesday morning. It'll be a circus. I guess the only broadcast is going to be on NFL Plus, NFL Network Plus. I don't even know what that is, but that's where it'll be. So it's not going to have the full treatment across all the networks like you would normally expect for the potential number one overall draft pick quarterback working out. That's not going to happen at Ohio State. So if you want to seek that out, do so. Otherwise, we'll have coverage at ohiostate.rivals.com and on the podcast here. Both maybe some snap judgments that are not two for one. Maybe it'll just be on the podcast daily for Thursday. Who knows? That's a little thing called We'll See. For Berm and Bill, I'm Austin. We'll talk to you later.